Boker Tov, if you just joined us, you're listening to SBS Radio broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. And for our Facebook viewers, welcome, shalom, happy Hanukkah. Wonderful to have you here on Facebook. We've got a fantastic guest today. And let me introduce to you Alex Rifchin. Alex Rifchin, I tell everybody, is the rising star in the Jewish community. He is with the ECAJ. We're lucky we have young people like you.
Thank you.
Alex, welcome to SBS.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Please introduce yourself to our listeners.
I don't think I can do better than your introduction there. But as you said, I'm the Director of Public Affairs at the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, which is the national representative body of the Australian Jewish community. And I've been in that role for approaching 5 years now. I do a lot of the political advocacy for the organisation, engagement with our politicians, with civil society, with the press gallery. I do a great deal of writing and public speaking as well. My background is in law. I practiced law for 6 years, first in Australia and then in London. And I'm of Soviet birth to begin with. My family arrived here in 1988 as refused Nixon refugees, and that's kind of set me on my way.
They were part of Let My People Go.
Yeah, and it's a tremendous, I suppose, irony or, it's gratifying to know that the organisation that really led national efforts to liberate families exactly like mine, the ECAJ, that I'm now in a position to give something back and serve the community and serve the organisation. So I'm very proud of that.
We're talking about the ECAJ, the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. I think that many of you don't realize what this organization is doing behind the scene because I think many people just hear about the ECAJ, they call it Jewish leadership. But can you please tell us about the work of the ECAJ for the community and all the lobbying they do and their achievement? Because I think it's a very, very important organization. And I think that our community should be aware of the ECAJ more than just thinking about it as Jewish leadership.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I mean, there are so many Jewish organizations, so many active organizations and individuals that for the public and for the Jewish community, even it's difficult to distinguish between them. But we like to think that our work and our history sets us apart from the rest. We've been around since 1944, leading the Jewish community. We're the peak representative body. We're a democratically elected organization. We're the overriding roof body of the Jewish community. And since our formation, we've been at the forefront of the great battles that have defined this community. So in 1944, at that time, you can imagine the sort of things that would be on our agenda when our people are being annihilated in Europe and we're fighting to ensure that Jewish refugees are able to come to this country. We're fighting for the establishment of a Jewish state. And then as time went on, the challenges became different. It was about integrating new communities coming to this country. It was about ensuring that there's always bipartisan support for Israel and our political system. And as we touched on, the great battle to liberate Soviet Jewry really consumed the community in my organization in the 1970s and 80s. So the challenges always change over time, inevitably, but we've remained a constant and we've always been there fighting for the community. And we do this in a great number of ways, everything from interfaith engagement, where the official body representing the Jewish community when we deal with Christian and Muslim communities. We're the official face of the Jewish community to government and to the press. We're also the Australian affiliate of the World Jewish Congress, which means we play a great role in international Jewish affairs. Myself and our executive director, Peter Wertheim, our president and our immediate past president, Robert Gut, we're very active on the world stage with the World Jewish Congress. So we do a great number of things. We're a small team, but we're deeply committed and passionate. And we punch well above our weight.
Yeah, I'm sure the community don't know half the work that you're doing. One thing that you're doing is also monitoring. And I tell our listeners, you're monitoring the anti-Semitism incidents or anti-Semitism in Australia. And you've got a wonderful lady sitting there, Julie Nathan, and I spoke to her a few weeks ago. And I wanted to ask you about her report, the anti-Semitism report in Australia. She said that Australia experienced a 9.5% increase in anti-Semitic attacks and assaults from September 2016 to September 2017. Yeah. And, that the report was released by the ECAJ just recently, almost 2 weeks ago. What is your comment about, I mean, the report? They're talking about, when I said increase, I asked her what percentage it is, and she was talking about 230 incidents, yeah. anti-Semitic incidents. 230 incidents is a lot of incidents in a free country like Australia. Yeah. We don't think nothing can happen here. Yeah. What are the incidents and what can we do about it?
Well, firstly, I think the 230 really is scraping the surface. So one of the issues that we've always had is underreporting. A lot of people will suffer or witness anti-Semitic incidents and they'll either, you know, not want to report it for whatever reason or won't know where to report it. So it is of cardinal importance that we have up-to-date, accurate statistics. So we need these incidents reported to us so that we can collate this information and present it to decision makers, the government, the media, so they know what's going on, so the public's aware of what's happening. You know, the origins of anti-Semitism, they vary immensely. Julie, in her report this year, she spoke about how there's been a strong rise in far-right activity. There's been a resurgence of groups like Antipodean Resistance. They're just one group. And, you know, there are a number of theories floating around about why this is happening. Some attribute it to a global phenomenon of populism or nationalism. Some attribute it to the rise of Donald Trump. It's all speculation, really. But from our point of view, we see that those incidents are there. Those incidents are occurring. And they range from anti-Semitic posters being, you know, distributed throughout universities and public spaces to attacks and abuse. So it really is deeply disturbing. And most Jews in this community, despite living in a place that is overwhelmingly tolerant, it's an incredible place to be a Jew. I can tell you from my engagement with Jewish communities abroad, we are the envy of the Jewish world, and with good reason. But still, there are people in this community from all political persuasions, all ethnicities, that wish to do us harm. And we have to remain vigilant.
And you're listening to SBS Radio, broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. And we are also live on Facebook. And if you didn't get it, please go to your Facebook or go to just Google Facebook and go to Facebook, Hebrew Shalom Australia, and you'll be able to see us broadcasting live out of the studio, just like a television, but via Facebook. So here we are in the studios in Sydney, broadcasting to the world, so you can see us. And you are on SBS Radio, and you can listen to us on the web and also on your iPhone. If you have an iPhone, it's so easy to download the app and listen to us anytime, anywhere. Alex, you're talking about anti-Semitic incidents. Is it the traditional anti-Semitism, or has it got anything to do with Israel and the Palestinian conflict?
There's always a range. There's always a range. And the extraordinary thing about the Jews, about anti-Semitism, is that whether it's the far left with kind of Marxist anti-Semitism or the far right with what people would be more familiar with, kind of neo-Nazi anti-Semitism, whether it's, you know, Christian fundamental anti-Semitism, supersessionism, or Islamic anti-Semitism, any one of these fringes, any one of these extreme groups, all they can all agree on a mutual hatred of the Jews. It's extraordinary. They will agree on nothing but that. So the threats to the community, the incidents of anti-Semitism, come from all forms and all places. With Israel, typically leftist anti-Semitism cloaks itself in the language of politics and international law and takes its hatred of the Jews out on Israel. So anti-Semitism has always, through history, targeted the dominant symbols of Jewish self-identification.
And I think you've written a book about it, I must say, show our listeners.
Thank you.
The name of the book is The Anti-Israel Agenda. And the word agenda is there for a reason.
It is. It is.
And it's so well written.
Thank you.
And it's really amazing. And, you know, I thought that it's so mature and knowledgeable what you've written. It's quite amazing.
Thank
so this,
you very
as
much.
You can see, Alex Rivchin, The Anti-Israel Agenda. How does that apply here in Australia?
There's a chapter in the book where I talk about the case. It's called the case of Marrickville. And I look at what happened in 2010, 2011 in this country. Marrickville, for those who aren't familiar, is a council, local government area in the inner west of Sydney. And that was really a flashpoint, ground zero for the BDS movement a few years ago. And the council there was dominated for a period by the Greens, and one of their first orders of business was to ram through BDS resolutions. And that really brought home to us, to our community, that we're not immune from this. We're a long way away geographically. But these political trends, these attacks on Israel, this anti-Israel agenda, is certainly played out in Australian government and Australian civil society as well. Perhaps it's not as severe at this stage. So we look at what's happening on the world stage. You have Norway's largest trade union with over 1 million members a few months ago voted to adopt a full boycott of Israel. You have Valencia Council in Spain a few months ago became the 50th Spanish council to adopt a full boycott of Israel. You have divestment resolutions going campus to campus in the United States, where even if these resolutions don't pass, they have the effect of indoctrinating a new group of students, a new generation of thinkers, with this image of Israel as being inherently evil. So it's a pervasive movement, and it affects every arm of civil society, and that's what this book deals with, and Western governments, multilateral bodies as well. And it's something that we're facing as well, perhaps on a smaller scale, but we saw on our campuses with Colonel Richard Kemp, who I took to Sydney University in 2015, and within minutes of commencing his lecture, it was stormed by anti-Israel protesters who accused him of supporting genocide because of his support for Israel. So these things do occur. And we have to be strong, we have to be unified, and we have to fight it.
And you're listening to SBS Radio, Shalom Australia, broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. And our guest today is Alex Rifchin from the ECAJ, from the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. Alex, what are the main challenges that we are faced here as the Jewish community around Australia?
They're varied. There are challenges that go to the very essence of being Jewish. So, for example, we have these flashpoints from time to time about an eruv being constructed, or that we have issues with Jewish burial space. Even the right to carry out kosher slaughter, brit milas, the right of circumcision, these things can't be taken for granted. So, if we look at what's happened abroad in liberal democratic states like ours, there have been attacks on these enduring Jewish customs. So ensuring that we retain those rights and privileges will be paramount going forward, because they strike at the very heart of what it means to be Jewish. On the Israel side of things, it has always been a directive of ours, a major priority, to ensure that in the political system there is bipartisan support for Israel. And what we mean by that is that regardless of who's in government and who's in opposition, Israel is never a divisive issue. The parties can agree that closer ties with Israel are a good thing. And lately, we've seen an erosion of that through various actors in the political system. There's been a decline in support. And this is, again, part of a global trend of liberal democratic parties tilting away from support for Israel. So that's certainly something of importance to us. And also things like Jewish education. So for a lot of people in the community, Jewish education is at the core of maintaining Jewish identity. And the costs to some are prohibitive, to others it's perhaps the standard of schooling that they're not happy with. But there's a whole range of issues that we deal with over time. And, you know, whether it's the problems that come from being a successful community, where we don't have anti-Semitism to make us feel like a people apart, and that tends to lead to assimilation, which is a peril in itself. So there's a whole range of issues that we have to confront. But when I look around at the community, when I look at our state of health right now, it really gives me immense optimism that whatever challenges come up in future, and there will be challenges, I can't anticipate a time in the future as good as the one right now, but we will be in a position to tackle those problems.
Talking about the challenges that the Jewish community is facing, I think that numbers, assimilation, yeah, numbers, and also newcomers. So first of all, when it comes to numbers, if you look at the census, there is a decline in, yeah, the number of Jewish people. I mean, they didn't disappear. They just, people didn't put in the census that they are Jewish, because that was a choice that you actually had to put Jewish in the census to notify that you're Jewish. So many people, I assume, didn't bother notifying on the census that they are Jewish. So there is a decline in numbers. And when you talk about demographics, are we an old community?
We are an aging community. You mentioned the census that showed a decline in the size of the community. So in our consultations with sociologists, statisticians, with people like Professor Andrew Marcus, who compiled the Gen 08 survey, and a new iteration of that, the Gen 17 survey, will come out shortly. They are all convinced that that number is inaccurate, that there was no decline in the Jewish community. In terms of identification, or people choosing not to identify, that is, again, is attributed to methodological factors rather than Jews suddenly losing identity. And the Gen 17 study of the Jewish community, which will come out shortly, we received a sneak peek of it at the ECAJ annual conference just a few weeks ago. It will actually show an increase in Jewish identity. So the numbers don't really reflect that there's a decline in identity. In fact, to the contrary. But still, you're right, we are a small community. At the best estimates, there's 120,000 Jews in this country, which means that electorally, we're not a very significant community, which means that in terms of joining mass movements, there's a limit to what we can achieve. But, you know, the strength of the Jews has never been in our numbers. It's never been in our quantity. It's been our quality. So as long as we keep producing Jews of the highest caliber that will go into the arts and politics, that will serve on the High Court. We have a Jew serving on the High Court. Now we have more Jews serving in the Australian Parliament than ever before. We have Jews in the judicial system, in academia, in all aspects of society. Sport, perhaps, we're underrepresented, but that's, you know, that's who we are as a people.
Never been a sporty nation.
It's never been our thing.
Not our forte.
No, we make up for it in other ways. But, you know, so as long as we retain that sense of identity, as long as Jews still feel it's important to be Jewish, I am absolutely confident that the enterprise of our people, the energy that we have in this community, will ensure that whatever problems we face, we'll be there to solve them.
Well, it seems to me that the Australian Jewish community always was enriched and relied upon new migration.
Yeah.
I mean, after the war, you had a lot of the refugees, the Holocaust survivors coming to Australia. You've got the Hungarian coming after 48 in 56 that enriched our community. And then you had the wave of the Russian, the Soviet Jews, and then the wave of the South African Jews.
Yep.
I think the wave of the South African Jews in the 80s and 90s really strengthened the Jewish community around Australia because the South African Jews, they were Jews that know how to live in the diaspora.
Yep.
They brought the South African shtetl into the Australian shtetl. What it means, they know how to live in a community.
Yep.
So they establish quickly their own synagogues in Australia, or they join the community.
Yep.
And it was a fantastic boost to schools, to the Jewish day schools, because they used to go to give their kids Jewish education. But we don't have any more a wave of South African Jews coming to Australia. I think the only wave of Jews coming to Australia are the Israelis.
True.
And I think that when it comes to the Israelis, I think the Australian Jewish community will have to learn how to accept the Israelis and how to live with the Israelis, and the Israelis will have to learn how to live in the diaspora.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my theory is that Israelis that were born in Israel, grew up in Israel, they just don't know how to live in the diaspora because they don't have the need in Israel to go to a synagogue or have a community. They've got their friends, they've got their family, and they don't need to identify by going to a synagogue or to a Jewish day school.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore doesn't exist here. So a lot of Israelis that come here, they either mix among themselves, but they don't feel themselves part of the Jewish community.
Yeah.
And they don't join the local synagogues as the South African or even the Soviet Jews used to do.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do to accept all these Israelis and make them feel that they are part of the Australian Jewish community?
Well, look, as you said out there, we have incorporated into this community so many disparate, diverse communities. As you touched on, you know, there were the post-war European refugees, and then the Soviet Jews, who were a totally different species. I can vouch for that. You know, we came with a very limited Jewish identity, which was defined by more nationalism rather than, you know, an understanding of what it means to be Jewish in a deep sense or in a religious or a spiritual way. We were Soviet people. And this community rallied behind us, united in order to absorb us and to enable us to live freely as Jews in this country. So regardless of where the community has come from, the established Jewish community at the time has always reacted favorably in order to meet the challenge of integrating that particular community of Jews. Some have have had fewer problems of integration. Again, you touched on the South Africans who came with language, who came with
education, language.
Exactly, all those things. In many cases,
and
they
money,
came.
In many cases,
money. Again, when I compare with the Soviet Jews, we all came absolutely penniless. And initially, we were relying on the charity of the Jewish community. With the South Africans, for the most part, that wasn't the case. But I guess the point here is that we always meet the challenge of integrating new Jews, of welcoming them. And with the Israelis, it poses a different challenge and a different opportunity. You're quite right. I mean, Israelis fortunately don't know what it means to live in the diaspora, but they've had other challenges in their development and they have much to give and much to contribute. And we're now seeing Israelis really at the forefront of enterprise and innovation. So the sorts of Israelis that are coming to this country now are also highly educated people. They're employers rather than seeking short-term employment. And they will have a great deal to contribute to this country, I'm sure. And it's also a challenge, as you point out, for the Jewish establishment, for the organizations in this country, to reach out to them and to bridge any gap between Israelis now living in the diaspora and the Jewish diaspora.
That's right. And as you said, I mean, a lot of the Israelis, it's actually young demographics, a lot of young people in their early 30s coming with young families settling in Australia. And a lot are connected via Facebook. So it's wonderful because I'm connected to a lot of Israeli groups via Facebook. And I get to know who are the Israelis that are here. And they still don't know how to sort of join a community and join a Jewish day school. And when it comes to a Jewish day school and Jewish education, I think the problem is not just for Israelis. It's also for Australian young families. We all know the challenges of a young family trying to establish a home, buy property in Sydney, Melbourne, even Adelaide, Perth, wherever you are. It's really hard to buy property and pay a very high mortgage. How can you pay the mortgage and pay a private school fees, because Jewish education is private school fees.
Sure.
And many people tell me, look, we just can't afford it.
Yeah.
We have to send our kids to a public school.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, we'd like them to send their kids to a Jewish day school so they keep our continuity of our community and prevent assimilation.
Yeah.
What do we do here?
You're absolutely right. It's a challenge. It's a challenge not just for the Jewish community, but all Australians. We want to provide our children with the best opportunities, which generally means private schooling. I'm personally a product of the public school system. I was at Woollahra and then Sydney Boys, but I had a very good education nonetheless. Outside the what are called grammar schools in the UK or selective schools here, in the public school system, the options are quite limited, and most Australians would prefer to send their children to private schools. And financially, it's a huge burden. It's an immense burden. The cost of childcare is prohibitive as well, and primary school and high school education even more so. So it's not a problem unique to the Jewish community. But one thing that we need to note is there's one thing about Jewish families not having the funds to send their kids to a Jewish high school. That's one thing. Perhaps the greater concern is where they have the means but still choose to send their children to a different private school. And to me, that's the great travesty. And it says something perhaps about the culture or the level of excellence of Jewish schools. To me, it should be an absolute no-brainer. There should be no question if someone has the means to send their children to a private school, it should be to a Jewish private school. And if that's not happening, there's something seriously fundamentally wrong. In terms of not being able to meet the cost, this is, as I said, always a challenge. But again, there's such innovation in our community. Recently, this program called J-Bridge was launched by the Jewish Communal Appeal here in New South Wales, which basically offers parents a HECS-style system for meeting the cost of Jewish day schools for parents. So that really is a revolutionary idea in meeting the cost of Jewish education.
So if parents, like if we have listeners now that want to think of sending their kids to a Jewish day school, what should they do?
Well, firstly, I would urge them to contact the Jewish Communal Appeal or go on their website and find out about this J-Bridge system. I know that applications are currently open, but they'll have full details. But they need to really think about the importance of it. I mean, there are many wonderful private schools in the eastern suburbs in the North Shore of Sydney and Victoria as well and throughout the country. But there is one thing that the Jewish schools offer over and above those other schools, and that is a Jewish education. There is no substitute for a Jewish education. I never had it, and I feel poorer for it. And it's something that I'm I want my children to have. I think it's fundamentally important to be able to learn Hebrew, to be able to assimilate Jewish learning into a classroom environment together with secular studies. I think it's a fundamental importance. And ultimately, sure, sacrifices will have to be made because the costs are high. But I hope that parents will see the value of making that sacrifice. And the value comes in establishing a firm, well-grounded Jewish identity in their children. And that's something you can't put a price on.
And you're listening to SBS Radio, Shalom Australia, broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. And our guest studio is Alex Rifkin. And we are going to run out of time, but I just want to comment that from my experience, the Jewish community here is very warm, very welcoming, really got a very strong identity. And many of the Jewish people got strong connections with Israel. They go a lot to visit Israel. Yeah. They've got children in Israel. Nevertheless, they're very proud Australians. I think the community here, we feel that we are very proud Australians and we feel very much Australians as well.
Absolutely.
And very proud of the fact that we can have the freedom of religion. We can openly practice our Judaism, be proud of who we are. And I think this is a wonderful thing, that we're very lucky here.
Absolutely. And not a day goes by that I don't note how fortunate I am to be in this country, having come, as I've mentioned a number of times, from a place of tyranny under communist the Soviet Union, to know how free I am to make these choices, to live my life as a Jew however I choose to, is an extraordinary thing. And as a community, we can actually trace our roots in this country back to the First Fleet. So unlike most diaspora communities where their origins aren't as well known as ours, we know that we arrived on the First Fleet. We're as Australian as any Australian in this country. We feel a part of this system. We participate in it fully. And we know what an extraordinarily great country this is to live in.
And it is a very multicultural country. And when I'm talking about multicultural, the Jewish community is also very multicultural. You've got the Ashkenazi Jews. Yeah. You've got either from Poland or from Hungary. You've got the South African Jews. You've got the Iraqi Jews, the Sephardi Jews, and the Soviet Jews, Russian Jews, they call them. And we all live together in harmony in multicultural Australia. And if you would like to comment, tell us your experience as a migrant and what you see, the challenges, please put your comments on SBS Hebrew Shalom Australia Facebook, because we have to go now. And unfortunately, I can sit and talk to you for another 3 hours. Yeah, I'll have to invite you back to the studio. But we've got, we would love to listen to Alex Dafner with this Yiddish report. So I would like to thank you, Alex Rifkin, from the ECAJ, the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, coming to the studio here today, and for your contribution to our program. And thank you very much to you all for watching us and listening to us around Australia and beyond.